these corporate roles, we have so much advantage, right, with the engineer brain, the IT brain, the tech brain, to really break down components, see the big picture, and go and attack the chunks of things that, you know, the problems that need to be solved. Welcome to the Path to Passive podcast, where we talk about building wealth and empowering lifestyle through commercial real estate investing for tech professionals. I always wish that other tech professionals reaching financial freedom had documented their journey along the way, so I'm doing it for the rest of us. Join us as we explore stories, many failures, and lessons learned along the way. I hope you enjoy and subscribe. What's up, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Path to Passive. This is Real Estate Investing for Tech Professionals, the guide for tech professionals that want to invest in real estate and get maximum leverage with their capital to earn income, save on taxes, and build generational wealth. I am your host, Steven Morita, and today's episode, we're going to be talking about creating passive income streams without tenants, toilets, or termites. So why these three items? Why tenants, termites, or toilets? Why do I mention these? So usually what you're going to be hearing is you go more and more into meetups, start talking to other investors, start talking to sponsors, etc. Whether you're talking single family homes or if you're doing multifamily, you're going to be hearing about tenants, termites, and toilets. It's the three T's that get referred to here and there. The thing is exactly what it sounds like, right? Tenants, you have to deal with tenants. You're going to be, you know, trying to serve the tenants. Do they have everything they need? Making sure that you have them lease and then getting them into properties and everything that goes along with actually doing all the operational aspects of working with the tenants. Toilets, pretty straightforward. This is just the example, the method to explain about what it's like to actually do the maintenance, right? Maybe they're, you know, it signifies anything that has to do with maintenance, whether it's the toilets, whether it's taking out, you know, making sure that you have the trash there, gets taken out, whether it's, you know, doing maintenance, do upkeep or renovations or any of that kind of stuff. And then the termites aspect signifies, well, the bigger ticket items, you know, the things that happen that need to be replaced and, you know, just other big things that happen. So what are we talking about? Talking about creating passive income streams with real estate. Before I get into that, I just wanted to reintroduce myself, give a brief background of how I got here. I grew up on the Big Island of Hawaii, and I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew that I was pretty good in tech. And much like a lot of other people, I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I remember being in Borders Books and finding this book on the shelf and pulling down Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I heard a lot about it at the time and read the book and I thought, okay, I could invest in real estate too. So having this crazy idea that I could go into tech, you know, just do what I was good at to earn money and buy real estate, that was the plan. You know, I ended up moving to Seattle and studying. You know, I moved to Seattle with like $2,000 in my pocket and went to some family and finally had a job at Amazon where I got my foot in the door into the big tech companies. I've been Amazon for 10 years now. All the opinions and everything I'm sharing here is my own opinions. I have to say that here. But anyway, I started buying real estate in 2015. I bought my first condo finally for myself in a town just north Seattle called Ballard. And then I started buying single family homes. And that was good. I had property managers for each of these different homes, but the thing is that they weren't bringing in a lot of cash and I didn't have a ton of capital. I was making pretty good money as we do in FANG or the MANG companies now working in Amazon, but I started to do the math. It's like, okay, well, how many of these houses am I going to need a passive income, right? Where, you know, in order to actually get the freedom that I'm looking for. And so I, you know, did that on my own without a mentor, which I absolutely do not suggest. Always have a coach or have some kind of mentor or someone else that you can talk to ask those questions along the way. And I actually ended up joining this mastermind a little bit later where, man, I ended up paying like $50,000 to get in here as an apprentice and get super high touch with coaches and, you know, these people that have pretty big portfolio in Texas, et cetera. to learn as much as I possibly could in all of the different strategies available around a single family home. So I'm talking about the strategy and the mechanics around subject to existing financing, doing wraps, what wholesaling actually is, et cetera, et cetera. And the marketing as well, you know, the different types of marketing, all kinds of stuff from here's what you would do for door knocking to doing direct mail and yellow letters to the postcards and UPS mail routes to USPS mail routes to, you know, the cold calling, all kinds of stuff. But I didn't get much yield there. And the thing is, it took a lot of work. It takes a lot of work, and you can spend the cash to leverage others, but to do it while you're really busy. But the thing is that I wanted to get super high leverage. I wanted to use my capital to get more capital. You know, the initial thought was, okay, well, how can I, you know, buy properties to get that passive income? But you have to go get those properties. You have to find them. You have to get those leads. And while you might be able to do it, maybe, you know, on the MLS, right? There's competition there. And the best deals are often found off market, which is why I was talking about these different strategies to find deals themselves. Long story short, from that mastermind, I found other people who actually were investing, doing private money lending is one thing. And they were lending out to other people, like hard money lending and private money lending to, you know, flips and stuff like that, where, you know, people would go and, you know, those people would actually go and find properties that single family homes that would fit the criteria. They would, you know, rehab it, they would put it on the market, they would sell it. And, you know, the profits, a lot of it would go to the private money lender. And then the people who were doing the rehab would take their cut as well. And, you know, everyone would get their split there. But the private money lenders were the ones that were able to just use their capital to get more capital. And then I found people that were also doing syndications or, you know, this passive investing, these limited partners that would invest money in commercial real estate. And that was a really big eye opener to me, because I didn't know that I could invest in commercial real estate just with that strategy. I thought you had to had, you know, millions of dollars. I thought you had to have a really big portfolio. You know, you had to start with single family before you could do anything else. And it just wasn't true. And so, you know, that's sort of the second point that I wanted to talk about here, is that you don't have to be a multimillionaire. You don't have to have all of that portfolio in order to invest in commercial real estate. And I ended up making a couple of these LP investments, which if you've heard any of my episodes so far, you'll have heard me talk about the difference between a general partner and a limited partner, a GP and an LP. But I did this. I made some investments as an LP. There were some of these different sponsors or operators, as we call the team who goes and finds the properties and, you know, does the analysis and does the, well, eventually do the managing and exit strategy, et cetera. And I knew them from the mastermind with it I was in, and I knew enough to look at the math for it to make sense for those deals. But ultimately, I was trusting those particular people. Now, I know a lot more now than I did then, but as much as I did, I wanted to get my foot in the door and invest. Anyway, the point still is that the way this works, if you're thinking about this, is, okay, Stephen, you're telling me that I don't have to be, you know, a millionaire, have all this money. So how does this actually work? Well, just like I was already talking about, the strategy is syndications. And like I said, I talk about this in other episodes, but what it is that you have this general partnership group, this GP group, who goes out and finds the property and does the analysis and says, okay, this fits our criteria. You know, this, you know, is a $10 million asset, $10 million property, as an example. I can get bank financing for $6.5 million, $7 million, because the bank thinks it's a good deal as well, which is super important. And then that same GP team needs to go and raise capital. They need to, quote unquote, raise equity. And that's where we come in. That's where we can come in. And we can come in with 25, 50, 100,000. There's, you know, other chunks of capital that can be invested as well for people who want to invest more. You know, most GP teams will always say, hey, if you want to invest more, great. You know, but this is where I came in, is that I invested, you know, capital into that deal as an LP a limited partner. And so I contributed to the equity portion, the down payment, if you will, that 30% that still needs to be fulfilled so that the bank can do the other 70% in this example to go and buy that asset. And so that's the strategy. And so, you know, you don't have to have all the money. You can come in as a limited partner and can actually make that investment. And so that's the way this works. Really, there's a lot more steps there, which again, I've broken out in different episodes and I've got some resources for you as well, but that's the point. And, you know, it's actually, there's groups and groups out there that are doing the same kind of syndication. I'm actually in, I was going to say two masterminds, but actually in four now. That original one where I did the single family, you know, learnings apprenticeship and where I did those initial passive investments. But I'm in four now. And, you know, one of them is for the commercial side is apartment investing, you know, multifamily. Another is learning to put together these real estate funds as well. And, you know, raising capital to also do these same kind of deals. And, you know, I'm getting to know other people who are these sponsorship groups, even, you know, more people that are these sponsors to go do the same thing. And I'm going to be investing alongside there because I want it to be a good deal for me too. Anyway, one of the things that I faced along the way was, you know, okay, how much do I really know about finance and real estate, and you know, can I really do this? And you know, surely that if you're at one of the big tech companies, you've probably faced some kind of imposter syndrome. You know, when you first started, maybe it was a job that you got right out of college, or you got somewhere else, and you know, it was pretty intimidating to be first. I have to say, you know, tons of smart people around you, they're working hard, very competitive space, etc. But you know, it's sort of true when you are in that feeling is sort of true when you're in any big industry in one area, when you get really good at a skill and then you go over to somewhere else, that kind of feeling, right? And that's what I mean by the imposter syndrome. It's like, you know, a black belt that's in you know, one martial art who goes to another that is completely different, or, you know, a black belt who's, you know, trying to learn to ski for the first time. Maybe that hasn't happened. But anyway, the thing is this, is that the really cool thing is that being in tech, there's so much, so, not only tech, but in these corporate roles, we have so much advantage, right, with the engineer brain, the IT brain, the tech brain, to really break down components, see the big picture, and go and attack the chunks of things that, you know, the problems that need to be solved. And so, you know, I really had to do, you know, really just dive in to the learnings and to the data, even, you know, real estate data, to really make this make sense for me. And it, as simple as it is, it's very true, is that, you know, the tech brain is great because, you know, we have many coaches who say the same thing, or I have many coaches that are in the multifamily investing, the funds, et cetera, who have come from some kind of tech background too. They've come from, you know, some kind of engineer, analyst, you know, medical background, et cetera, who echo this exact same thing. And the point is that you don't have to have, you know, the finance or real estate skills right away. It's that you can just start small, break it down, learn and develop it over time. And I think it's just important to mention that here too, because, you know, it's something that you'll inevitably we're going to face, especially when you're on the day-to-day in a space where you're really good at doing something. It's like, okay, this seems like a lot of information, but just breaking it down, being patient, looking at how to systematically go through each of the different steps and learn it and do it is really all that it matters. And one of the other things that I get asked sometimes, or I get asked and I hear is, hey, is this legit, right? It's like, that sounds kind of crazy. That sounds, you know, is this a scam? Which is super interesting because, you know, if you've spent any time looking at, you know, if you've ever heard of mutual funds or hedge funds or private equity, any of these things, this is exactly the same thing, right? So these are private teams that are going out and buying these, you know, commercial real estate property, these apartment complexes, right? And so with that, You know, there's rules that have to be followed from the SEC, the Securities Exchange Commission. And so, you know, it's the same thing, but these are private placements. And so private placements mean that they get exempt by these 506D regulations, the 506D rules. And you can totally check this out. I did an episode on this before as well. You can Google it. But it just means that, hey, because it's a private offering, that it doesn't have to go through the same process to be a public offering like there would be in an IPO, which, you know, we're familiar with for all those tech unicorns out there who are going to IPO and everybody gets stock and everyone, you know, is going crazy at, you know, ringing the bell in New York on one of the exchanges. But it's the same thing. Instead of it being a private offering like a REIT, we have these private placements where private teams, you know, private ownership can go out and acquire these properties. And so it's the exact same thing. And with that comes, you know, less transparency to the public, but the transparency is actually there to the investors. So for myself, I get, you know, quarterly reports. You can get monthly as well for some sponsors, but for this one of these particular deals, I get quarterly reports on what's going on with the property. You know, how is the business plan being executed? Is it being executed well? What are the top issues that are coming up that I need to know about, etc.? And so those are the information that I get and I can ask the sponsor about too. So the two key points here to mention is just that these are private alternative assets, alternative because they're not publicly listed, and the visibility that you have at it comes from being an investor where you're in the deal and you can go and ask the sponsor about the information, ask the GP team questions about that asset as well. So that's just something to mention. Remember, this is part of the syndication process where you have the GPs and you have the LPs. The LPs are able to ask those questions to the GPs. They just don't have the decision-making power usually in most deals unless it's written out that way. So who's doing this? Like I said, you know, there's different kinds of funds out there, hedge funds and public securities, private equity, where, you know, other GP teams will raise capital to go invest in private companies themselves. And then the same thing here would be very similar, is that you would, you know, raise capital, GP team would raise capital to go invest in private real estate deals as well. So just as a reminder, wanted to just talk about what it means to be, you know, a limited partner and how we actually go about investing into these commercial real estate. And it's pretty much the same process, whether it's self-storage, you know, whether it's RV parks, mobile home parks, multifamily, you name it, if it's some kind of thing like this, you know, there's going to be this type of raising capital. And there's different rules out there too that need to be followed from how capital is raised. But it's a little bit out of scope for this episode. You can certainly check those out in other episodes I have. You know, look for ones like active investing versus passive investing, and you know, the different types of investors, including, you know, accredited investors, qualified clients, qualified purchasers. And so more on that in another one. So if you want to check out some more information about what I've talked about, I've got two different things for you to, you know, get some more information about some of the different terms and different processes that go into this entire process about investing in deals. And so it'll talk about the like baseline knowledge that you need to have, which in this Investor 101 course, all you have to do is go there. It's going to be in the show notes. Or if you're checking this out on YouTube, check out the description as well. Go there, put your email in, you can get instant access to check out the information there. And for those who are a little bit more advanced and want a little bit more in-depth reading, I've also got this due diligence checklist, which is going to go a bit more into what is actually looked for on the acquisition of the property. In this case, I have it for multifamily because that's what I've been investing in. And so it'll walk through that process. You can see the due diligence process and learn some more there too. I've got that link also in the show notes. So go there, put an email address, check it out. Let me know if you have any questions. You can reach out to me at Steven at aritacapital.com. or you can reach out to me on Instagram, or please feel free to connect with me and reach out to me on LinkedIn as well. Would love to hear from you, connect, see where you're at, and help any way I possibly can. Happy to answer questions, etc. Love talking about this stuff. So something I could do for you, certainly will. That in mind, if you have any episodes that you'd like to hear about in the future, please let me know. I've also got some great guests coming too. I've been interviewing a ton of guests. Also, please drop a review wherever you're listening. Super appreciate it, whether it's Apple, Spotify, or right here on YouTube if you're watching me there too. Appreciate you. Have a wonderful day, and I will see you next time in the next episode. Cheers. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Path to Passive. We love connecting with our listeners and those on the path to architecting their wealth and improving their lives. Feel free to let us know what topics you'd like to see in future episodes. Get in touch with us through email or Instagram. See you next week for a new episode.